Hey, I'm still Willie and I'm still an alcoholic. Doesn't that beat all? Thought maybe I'd get over it by now. Did they turn the lights out on us again? I'm going blind as well as deaf. Not deaf yet, but I get sounds out of here, people talking. Of course, I'm all by myself in a deserted place when they start talking with this infected ear, but that's all right. Okay, we're going to do step three. And I want to flicker flashback and give you the principle of the little guideline that I gave you, that absolutely, not written in stone, please don't pass on that these are the principles. No, they're just what was passed on to me. And I have really been happy with the chain that has been there for me all along, and I was given so many little gifts. And this was beautiful for this man to say, you know, Willie, this helps me when I'm working with other people. Because at that time I was fired up, and that's what I wanted to do. And he said, because they always ask, where are the principles? So he said, I decided that I could make some of my own, going by each step and what we needed to start working on in our lives. And in that step one, remember, it was honesty. That's the basic principle of step one. As far as I can see, if you find another principle that works in better with the step we're on, you mark the one out I gave you, and you put yours in there. But as we go along, I think you'll see some semblance of reasoning behind the principles that we can start working on as we take the step. We can carry that honesty into everyday living to the best of our ability. It takes a while, as I said this morning. It takes a while to start thinking in honest terms, because we're all mixed up about what honesty is. I was certainly mixed up. When I say we all were, I'm putting me number one, because otherwise I couldn't judge. But I know that I was so mixed up. I didn't lie to people. As I told y'all today, I was a teacher. I had been a teacher for many years. I had never lied to a school board. I might skirt around a few things, but I never just tell them a bald-faced lie. And I didn't envision myself as a liar in the way I had become. But when we have to start lying about our drinking, it starts carrying on into every facet of our lives. But it comes on in the form of excuses, rationalizing. If you put excuses and rationalizing and lying in a sack and shake them up real good, they're going to all fall out together, because they all amount to the same thing. You let me alone with an excuse, and I get started and I'm doing all right. But you always have to make an excuse for yourself, sound a little better, to make yourself feel a little better about yourself, about screwing something up. So you start in with these little explanations, but gosh, a thought comes that, ooh, this will make it sound better, like it's not my fault at all. I wasn't even there at the time. I was over in the other county. But if you let me alone with it a while, just a plain old excuse, I'm going to lie to you, because I want to make it sound as good as I possibly can to put me in a better light. So I've started building on that, and I tried to over and over and over. Of course I still make excuses. That's a human trait, because we want to just not be wrong all the time. That's not reasonable. And sometimes that's what I am, just wrong every place I turn. There are those days, you know. But I don't want to look wrong, so if I don't catch myself, but that's where the honesty comes in, I'll make an excuse for it. If I'm late to an appointment, I go on and on and on and on. And even if it's true, it starts out true, but then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And before you know it, I've told you a lie. And all I had to do was say, I didn't leave home in time. That's why I'm late. It's usually that simple. And even if there was, you know, anything that happened that really delayed me and it was an honest thing, it doesn't do any good. I'm taking up your time by telling you all the details about why I was late. But I want to look better in your eyes and not look like a person that can't keep an appointment on time. So I watch myself on that, because it's not just a bald-faced lie that you tell somebody, but that those little habits that I needed to break. So that acceptance in step one, honesty and acceptance of the fact that we are alcoholic. And even if it's iffy at first, if we don't quite believe it, I kept saying it because they expected me to say it until I understood it. Okay, step two, we pick up the principle of hope. And dear Lord, we've never needed it like we need it now. And that's one of the first things I try to pass on to the girls. You know, okay, this is rough for you right now, but you'll make it. You'll make it, honey. Keep putting one foot in front of the other. Give her that hope, because I know how important hope is in my life, and especially now with so much confusion in the world and such a... It's not a reasonable world anymore. Back when I came only to this earth, life was pretty simple in the circumstances I was in. You know, man stole a horse, he was hung. There wasn't anything debatable about that. It was clear, cut, and dried. They didn't take him to a jury. They didn't do anything. He stole a man's horse. They hung him. And that's a bad example, but it's the only one I could think of at the time. Sometimes my mind works good. Sometimes it goes back to... But the principle of hope, we need to put that in. But that's step two. Knowing that we don't... Maybe we don't have to be the last say in everything that we do. That maybe there's help out there that will do a better job of looking after Willie than Willie was looking after her. Doing a much better job. Maybe there was. I wasn't sure yet. Because all of these steps except step one, we never take entirely. But it's an adventure, honey. That's not a downer that, oh, you'll never feel better about yourself. No. Each step is an adventure that you carry on through the rest of your life. Step one is the only one that we must take 100%. And that's the acceptance that we're alcoholic and I'm going to be one until they put me in that pine box. And that's okay. As I told y'all this morning, I'm going to be allergic to penicillin. I hope I don't take pneumonia, because that would jerk me out of it quicker than anything else. People that are diabetic are not going to, you know, get the miraculous cure. Not yet. They may in the future. But it gives us that hope that there's an adventure in front of us. That, all right, we get alcohol out of our lives. Big deal. We've got all the rest of the stuff going on. And they don't tell us we have to, you know, turn into saints. Thank goodness. Aren't you glad about that, girls? And some of you men, some of you more dangerous ones. But that hope, and we need it now. God, the world looks like it's in such a mess. But as my old dad used to say, honey, the pendulum swings. It has to get worse before it'll get better. And he lived through the big depression and World War I and everything else. But he said the pendulum swings. It gets worse and then it gets better. When it's down here, it's worse. But it'll swing. And that's what I have to hope for. Because I have grandchildren, 2 grandsons. Wouldn't you know that my higher power would send me boys? And I was raised with 2 brothers, 3 brothers, in fact. One was adopted. And I think more like a boy most of the time. That's why I love the motorcycle riding. But I have my grandsons, and I've got to hold on to that hope that things are going to straighten out, that they'll be free to roam around up and down the country road and everything the way I did, free as a bird. If I don't, then I'm going to be pretty miserable about those 2 beautiful grandsons, and I don't want to be miserable. It's going to change. All right, in step 3, we add the principle of faith, which goes right along with the hope. But see, the fact that they told me to maybe try having somebody in my life, something that was bigger than I was, that could help guide my life better than I could. And so they're asking me to put the faith in this thing even if I didn't understand it. And they were good enough to tell me it could be anything. For a while, anything will do, because I'm not worried about you coming around to your way that settles way down deep in how you feel about yourself. You'll come to it. And if you're mixed up now, that's all right. Because most people are on that. You have to, sort of like buying a new pair of shoes, you have to put it on and wear them and wear them before you get it broken in to the idea that we're not out there in space all by ourselves. Sure, a lot of people have drawn away from us and we feel like we're out there on a limb. But now you have something that you can start putting your faith in. It'll be a job you'll have for the rest of your life. But it'll be so exciting to work with that idea that I am not responsible for making all the decisions in my life. I've got help. When the cards are down, I have help. I have a dealer I can go to. And this gives me the faith that no matter what I have to go through, I'll get through it. And I haven't found that to be incorrect in 48 years. Coming up Sunday, I fudged 47, blah, 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 in a couple of days. But the thing of it is, this faith gives us bedrock. Because I was used to, you know, boy, I'll fix this. Yeah, just don't worry about it. I'll fix it. Yeah, I was doing a good job fixing Willie, wasn't I? Yeah. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives I sort of skipped over that when I first read it and first looked at it. Our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Not only that will that I had that was turned upside down to have things my way or the highway. If you didn't do it my way, just move out of the way. But not only that hell-bent for China attitude, but to turn my life, my daily living over to the care of something else, I couldn't do that. And in the beginning, just reading it, but like so many good people, I read a statement and drew a conclusion instead of really seeing what the rest of the thing said. Look at the first word. If you're in one of these countries, and I've sat in meetings over and over and heard people say, and people with time, a lot of time sometimes, heard people say, you know, I turn my life over, but then before I know it, I'm taking it back. And they act so surprised. You're going to do that the rest of your life. And they explain that here. The first word says practicing. It doesn't say doing step three. It doesn't say that. And all through here, it emphasizes the need for you to know that it's a lifetime process. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. And decisions are very hard to understand sometimes. A decision, you know, is sort of like a milking stool under a bull. It's really not of much value. Just the decision to do it, there's other decisions that go along with it, and you're going to make some right ones and you're going to make some wrong ones. But practicing step three, it says, is like the opening of a door, which to all appearances is still closed and locked. All we need is a key. And the decision to swing the door open, and there's only one key, and it's called willingness, which is another word for faith. To say, okay, I'm going to try this, and see if it works. The willingness to try it. Once unlocked by willingness, the door opens almost of itself, and looking through it, we shall see a pathway, beside which is an inscription, and it reads, this is the way to a faith that works. Isn't that a pretty promise? In the first two steps, we are engaged in reflection. We saw that we were powerless over alcohol, but we also perceived that faith of some kind, if only in AA itself, is possible to anyone. And that's kept many of us sober. It was a combination of seeing that these men were staying sober and they lost everything they had. And to just sit there and think, you know, well, any old codger could do that. You know, if I was way up in my, way up, and you know how old 40 is when you're 20? But just knowing they had stayed sober during all of the things that they talked about, it was, that gave me my first inkling of faith. Just to say, well, you know, they can do it. I didn't blame them because they were old and, you know, too old to do anything else. But at that particular time, I understand it better now. These conclusions did not require action. They required only acceptance. And that acceptance is a beautiful thing. It's not so complicated as you might think. Just basic, like in that first step, the honesty and acceptance. And acceptance isn't all that complicated. I love my story of Leroy, and there's too many new people here. You old people, stop up your ears. These new people need to know, really bedrock, what acceptance is. When they first brought in those great big diesel trucks, this old boy down in Alabama went to take his test to see, because they were careful about it. They're not careful now about who drives them, but they were careful back then. And they thought, oh, they were popping up with the psycho business and psychobabble. And they thought, well, you know, these men ought to test them to see if they're stable enough mentally, as well as being strong enough to handle these big trucks. So they devised a thing where they would question them and about how they were emotionally stacked up and everything. And they brought this old boy in, and they gave him a psychological test, they thought. And they said, well, now we're going to give you a hypothetical situation. If you were coming down a steep, steep hill, it's dark, it's been raining, and the road is slick, and you get right down to the bottom of that road, and you put on your brakes, and you don't have any brakes, what are you going to do? And the old boy sat there a few minutes, and he said, well, I'm going to wake up Leroy. And the man thought, oh, you know how they get that gleam in your eye. He has compassion for his fellow man and all this. But he wanted him to put it in words. You know how they do? They want us to put it in words. He said, why would you wake up Leroy? The old boy said, well, Leroy, he ain't never seen a big wreck. That's as complicated as acceptance is. Look at the situation and see if it could head you towards a big wreck. Because many times it's right there staring in your face and you skirt around it. Oh yeah, but so and so and so and so and so and so. He wasn't worried about Leroy because he just wanted to be sure he didn't miss the wreck. And that's how simple. See, I seemed to complicate everything when I came in here. Everything was so complicated. Somebody once said, Willie, you could complicate a one-car funeral. And that is the truth. But that's the way my life had gotten complicated due to the drinking. You can't mess with booze and drink as much booze as we did without life getting pretty complicated. Said, like all the remaining steps, step three calls affirmative action. For it is only by action that we can cut away the self-will, which has always blocked the entry of God, or, if you like, a higher power, into our lives. Faith, to be sure, is necessary, but faith alone can avail nothing. We can have faith and yet keep God out of our lives. Therefore, our problem now becomes just how and by what specific means shall we be able to let Him in. Step three represents our first attempt to do this. In fact, the effectiveness, good promise coming up, the effectiveness of the whole AA program will rest upon how well and earnestly we have tried. See, all those words are telling us this is not going to come to a basic conclusion. Tried to come to a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Because how many times have we thought, I've done that. I have taken step three. I'm there. And then you let something come up, and the old self will. That's basic to all human beings, as we talked about this morning. It's going to slam that door shut. Let's read on. It says, to every worldly and practical-minded beginner, this step looks hard, even impossible. No matter how much one wishes to try, exactly how can he turn his own will and his own life over to the care of whatever God he thinks there is? Fortunately, we who have tried it, and with equal misgivings, can testify that anyone at all, can begin to do it. We can further add that a beginning, even the smallest, is all that's needed. Just to get up in the morning and just practice saying, you know, I thank whoever's looking after me today. Because a lot of days I'm not looking after myself. So I know something's going to come up. So even if I start with that little beginning, it was suggested by one of the old men to try that. He said, well, just try that in the morning when you get up. Just say, whatever's looking after me, I hope you're on duty today. Just some little simple something to let me know that I wasn't the all in all that there was for that day. That I was going to need some help. Always called it lucky. Don't believe that's what it was, because I've lived long enough to be in some big trouble at various times. Sober as a judge, but in big trouble. Troubles that I had nothing to do with, but that were there. That's called life. That four-letter word is always there every morning when I get up. That life is there. We can further add that the beginning, even if it's smallest, is all that's needed. Once we have placed the key of willingness in the lock and have that door ever so slightly open, we find that we can always open it some more. Though self-will may slam it shut again, as it frequently does, it will always respond the moment we again pick up the key of willingness. Just to be that willing to look and see. A man passed this on to me. I have no idea what grapevine it was in, but it was in. He copied it off and handed it to me years ago. And it says, and many of you have heard it, as children bring their broken toys to us to mend, I took my dreams to God because He was my friend. But instead of leaving Him in peace to work, I hung around and tried to help with ways that were my own. At last I jerked him back and cried, why must you be so slow? My child, he said, what could I do? You never would let go. And that's going to happen, but don't let that discourage you. It's going to slam shut, but they're giving us an idea that, okay, here's what to do about it. Maybe this all sounds mysterious and remote, something like Einstein's theory of relativity or a proposition in nuclear physics. It isn't at all. Let's look at how practical it actually is. Every man and woman who has joined AA and intends to stick, without realizing it, made a beginning on step three. Isn't it true that in all matters touching upon alcohol, each of them has decided to turn his or her life over to the care, protection, and guidance of Alcoholics Anonymous? We don't do that all of a sudden, but somehow that little trust is there, that somehow these goofy people have something that's running their lives better than I'm managing to run. So maybe it's worth my while to listen to them. Already a willingness has been achieved to cast out one's own will and one's own idea about the alcohol problem in favor of those suggested by AA. Any willing newcomer feels sure AA is the only safe harbor for the foundering vessel that he's become, whether that's a real strong idea or just sort of a little inkling. Now, if this is not turning one's will and life over to the newfound providence, then what is it? Our AA meetings are growing and growing and growing, so they're coming. Even if sometime they force there at the point of a gun, they're coming. But suppose that instinct still cries out, as it certainly will, yeah, respecting alcohol, I guess I have to be dependent upon AA. But in all other matters, I must still maintain my independence. Yeah, right. Oh, doesn't sucking on that alcohol, doesn't that give us independence? Ridiculous. Nothing is going to turn me into a non-entity. What did I think I was when I came to this program? A drunken woman. But I didn't want anybody telling me, turning me into a non-entity. If I keep turning my life and my will over to the care of something or somebody else, what's going to become of me? I wasn't worried when every time I picked up that bottle. I didn't think, what's going to become of you, Willie? You keep doing this. Uh-uh. But boy, when you kept trying to help me not do that anymore, I'd bristle. I look like the hole in the donut. That's just about the what I thought. This, of course, is the process by which instinct and logic always seeks to bolster egotism and so frustrate spiritual development. The trouble is that this kind of thinking takes no real account of the facts. And the facts seem to be these. The more we become willing to depend upon a higher power, the more independent we actually are. You're going to have that proven to you if you stick with this thing. Therefore, dependence, as AA practices it, is really a means of gaining true independence of the spirit. And what's more desirable than that spirit to have independence? I don't necessarily need it in the physical type, but that spirit to dream and to think and to experience things to the fullest. I go back once in a while and I've had a great time someplace, just ordinary time, no telling what, might be a barbecue, just anything. And on the way home to think to myself, you know, I experienced the whole thing. The whole thing. The barbecuing and the brouhahas and the laughing and the shoving around and doing all the things that people in Texas do at the barbecue. Stomp a little bit and get to dancing. And yeah, some of them are drinking. But I can always say, you know, I experienced the whole thing. And furthermore, I'm going to remember it in the morning. That's what was important to me. That memory of all the good times. Oh, I had so many good times that I don't have the faintest idea what they were all about. But I was sure I had a good time. I had a lot of things to prove it, yeah. Okay. They talk about different ways that this is such crazy thinking, that if we become dependent, and we've heard people criticize our program by saying, it's just another crutch. It's just a crutch. That's all it is. These people get on this stuff and it's just a crutch. If I have a broken leg, you better believe I'm going to use a crutch. If I don't, I'll have to sit on my can and not be able to do anything. You better believe I want to pick up a crutch. So I can get on with my life. And we think of independence being taken away from us if we follow the suggestions of this program and the suggestions of the people that are trying to help me. They're not asking us to sign any petition or have it notarized. I never had one of them giving a notary public and say, you know, you've got to notarize this statement. No, they're just suggesting. And for my independence to be taken away from me, we're not independent in so many areas of our life. Do you grow your own groceries or do you go to the store? Do you do your own healing or do you go to the doctor? When you need, legal help, do you do it yourself or you go to a lawyer? We're dependent in every area. We can light candles when our power goes off, our electricity goes off. We can light candles, but we sure can't see as well. We're dependent in so many areas. What's wrong with that? If it's a good thing, I'll be dependent on it. when the power goes out and it goes up to 105 or 6 in Texas, you better believe I'd love to be dependent on that AC coming back on. But see, that's not a sick dependency. Not all dependencies are bad. So if you think that, oh, these people want to run my life, they want to tell me everything, some people will, you know, maybe give you a little more advice than you wanted and didn't want any and weren't supposed to get any in the beginning. But we can always either do it or not do it. One of the two. But when they give a basic suggestion that's not illegal, immoral, or fattening, it's all right to go ahead and do it. Give it a try. Okay. It talks about the different kinds of dependency and how crazy that is. On 37, but the moment our mental or emotional independence is in question, how differently we behave, how persistently we claim the right to decide all by ourselves just what we shall think and just how we shall act. Oh yeah, we'll weigh the pros and cons of every problem. We'll listen politely to those who would advise us, but all the decisions are to be ours alone. Nobody is going to meddle with my personal independence in such matters. Besides, we think there is no one we can surely trust. We are certain that our intelligence, backed by willpower, can rightly control our inner lives and guarantee us success in the world that we live in. This brave philosophy wherein each man plays God sounds good in the speaking, but it still has to meet that acid test. How well does it actually work? One good look in the mirror ought to be the answer enough for any alcoholic. Just how much sense does it make? You know, when you do break an arm or a limb or a back or anything, you go to the therapist, they send you to the therapist, and you follow his suggestions. What is he trying to do? Run your life? Telling me how to strengthen my back, telling me how I'm going to be able to walk again. I'll do it by myself. How much sense does that make? See, I saw with my thinking, I wasn't thinking. Not really. I was reacting. Nobody's going to tell me how. And yet, when I need medical help, I go to the doctor and try to follow his directions, whether I agree with them or not. I'm going to try to, you know, take the dumb pills, and when they always tell me, now be sure and take all these antibiotics. And I get to feeling better in 3 days, and I look at that little pill bottle, and I think, take that, you know, I guess because I paid for it, I might as well go ahead and take it. But in the very base of my mind is the fact that the doctor said to take the whole smear. So what, it's not going to cost me anything. I've already paid for the pills. Take them. See, if I just keep my thinking down at bedrock and not get up there floating around in the sky someplace and not making any common sense. This program, this life is about common sense. I'm sorry, I just can't do it any other way. Okay, on page 39, and those things that we skip are good stuff in there. Don't skip over it if you're a newcomer and have never gotten into the 12 and 12. When you do get around to it, when you've read that big book backwards and forwards and crossways and upside down, and studied it, because that's the program, the meat of it right now. But this is the help in daily living that you can take advantage of. It says, so how exactly can the willing person continue to turn his will and his life over to a higher power? He made a beginning, we have seen, when he commenced to rely upon AA for the solution of his alcohol problem, listening and seeing that we weren't so unique. We got it. We got drunk. We got in trouble. We somehow got out. We turned around, did the same thing over. So we began to see and maybe get the hint that we might be having a little trouble with alcohol. And that takes care of that problem. By now, though, the chances are that he has become convinced that he has more problems than alcohol, and that some of these refuse to be solved by all the sheer personal determination and courage he can muster. They simply will not budge. They make him desperately unhappy and threaten his newfound sobriety. Okay, I'm sober, but I'm miserable. I mean, nothing, you know. Once in a while, I get a little aggravated, not too often. Where's Bahia? She can attest to the fact. Sometimes I get aggravated about something. And I think, you know, I'm sober. This should be better. It shouldn't happen. I shouldn't be so baffled by this situation. But you get to thinking that you're slipping back in and forgetting who's in charge. And that's very easy to do. With all the complications that life hands us. So we can be sober and everything not be happy, happy, happy. But I hate to sit in a meeting and some old bloat in the back will say, you know, I've been sober 20 years. I was miserable when I'm drinking and I'm miserable now. But I'm sober and been sober 20 years. And he looks like somebody just hit him in the face with a dead fish. You know, what a beautiful thing to offer the newcomer walking in. You're just going to love it here. You're going to be happy to be sober. Not, you know, tell him how happy he's going to be, but look like you're just about ready to be laid out someplace. Uh-uh. That isn't all there is. Being sober is very important because you can't get the rest of this program without being sober. But by George, you know, you can say, you know, maybe I got some other problems here. Some old human being traits that I need to narrow down to size because they're just about to swallow me whole. Being sober is not going to solve all the problems that you have as a normal, ordinary human being. And the ones you've piled up and exaggerated. That lying and being dishonest and then being guilty about it and being remorseful about it. See, we can be remorseful about some way we've messed up with somebody and we're so sober our hair hurts. But we can still get messed up with other people when we don't take their feelings. But that's what we learn to do in this program. We take their feelings into consideration. They simply will not budge. They make him desperately unhappy and threaten his newfound sobriety. Our friend is still victimized by remorse and guilt when he thinks of yesterday. Bitterness still overpowers him when he broods upon those he still envies or hates. His financial insecurity worries him sick. And panic takes over when he thinks of all the bridges to safety that alcohol burned behind him. When you look back and say, good Lord, I could have amounted to a lot more. You don't know what you can amount to starting right now. You don't know unless you go out and try it. And maybe circumstances don't permit you to fulfill a dream that you have when you were right past being a teenager. That's all right. Get a new dream and then fulfill it. That's when I took up motorcycle riding. I know when I pile out of the driveway in my motorcycle, you know, on my motorcycle, my neighbors might look over and say, that old broad's crazier than a loon driving that. Well, but I didn't start just all of a sudden. I started with my son when he started. I mean, I got interested in it, and then I started riding on the back of his motorcycle. Pulling in the driveway one day, I said, you know, honey, would you mind if I bought a motorcycle? Let's go, Mama, right now. We went up to another city and bought the motorcycle and brought it home. They didn't sell them in Spring, Texas then. But we went up there and got the motorcycle and brought it home, and I let him teach me how. I didn't just try to get on it and ride. But remember, that was when he's now 45 years old, and he's been riding since he was 12. So that wasn't yesterday. And I didn't jump on and start riding all over the place. But the thing of it is, I was willing to try something to fulfill, because I had always liked motorcycles. We went up to another city and bought the motorcycle and brought it home. They didn't sell them in Spring, Texas then. But We went up there and got the motorcycle and brought it home, and I let him teach me how. I didn't just try to get on it and ride. But remember, that was when he's now 45 years old, and he's been riding since he was 12. So that wasn't yesterday. And I didn't jump on and start riding all over the place. But the thing of it is, I was willing to try something to fulfill, because I had always liked motorcycles. Hadn't been very many in my life. But every once in a while, I'd run into a motorcycle driver and loved it. Just loved to watch them. I love the sound of them. Now I prefer the quieter ones. But back then, the more noise they made, the happier I was. You know, if your dream didn't come true, that you did blow away, maybe it was making room for a new dream, something that suited you better. Because in the circumstances of my growing up, there wasn't any way I could fulfill that particular thing that I had always thought, you know, I'd like to learn to ride one of those things. Don't give up on your dream. If you have to give up on one dream, get you another one. And how shall he ever straighten out the awful jam that cost him the affection of his family and separated him from them? When you start living right, you're going to be amazed at how many family situations, not quickly, but how many of them will straighten out. Maybe not all. That's human relations. You've been sober all of your life, that could happen. I've seen preachers' groups just all scattered out, you know, and not this one not speaking to that one. Yeah, we ruined some family relations. We hurt some of them, and we've mended a lot of them. So don't give that up. Don't say it can never be done. Just keep doing what you think is right and what feels right. His lone courage and unaided will cannot do it. Surely we must now depend upon somebody or something else. See, we're going to have a step following that tells us how we can start mending some of those relationships with not only our family but friends in the amend step. We're going to learn how we can make those beginnings, and some of them work out. At first, that somebody is likely to be his closest AA friends. He relies upon the assurance that his many troubles, now made more acute because he cannot use alcohol to kill the pain, can be solved too. Of course, the sponsor points out that our friend's life is still unmanageable even though he is sober, that after all, only a bare start on AA's program has been made. More sobriety brought about by admission of alcoholism and by attendance at a few meetings is very good indeed. But it is bound to be a far cry from permanent sobriety and a contented, useful life. I've always said I have never gotten rid of one or even made a good dent in one of my character defects, and that's greed. Not where this program is concerned. I can control greed in any other area of my life. It was never a big problem. Grew up not having anything and have been contented, you know, just that way. But the thing of it is, I don't want just permanent sobriety. The people in AA taught me that. Dad, Willie, don't settle for that. Don't settle. It's great that you're sober. Hallelujah. But now what else you going to do? How else you going to build this new life without alcohol in it to give you the fake feelings? What are you going to do with real gut-wrenching pain when it comes along? Pain either emotionally or physical. What you going to do with it? Make some plans. Do some little thing that they do in defensive driving. Plan ahead of time for that big wreck. Plan ahead of time how unpredictable other drivers are. We know we're good. Oh, shoot, we're good. But it's those other people that run around trying to, and they aim their cars right at us. That's what defensive driving's all about. What? Well, wake up Leroy when all else fails. Thank my helper there. That is just where the remaining steps of AA program come in. Nothing short of continuous action upon these as a way of life can bring the much desired results. See, we chip away, chip away, chip away, just like we do anything else in life. If we want to, you know, learn to work a computer, we don't just go in and sit down and say, okay, here we go. Yeah, I could mess up the whole computer system there. But the thing of it is, we learn step by step by step by step. And then we still mess up, because that computer's going to mess up. You know, said everybody makes mistakes, but the computer really can screw up a day. I hear you're from these people that use computers. That was not one of the things I wanted to do, so I haven't done it yet. Any day now. Then it is explained that other steps of the AA program can be practiced with success only, ring around word, when step three is given a determined and persistent trial. It doesn't say until step three is done. That's not the way, but when you're aiming towards it, when you take your life and you're going to aim for it, I will have my life and my will managed by a higher power, whatever that higher power is, what it means to me. This statement may surprise newcomers who have experienced nothing but constant deflation and a growing conviction that human will is of no value at all. They have become persuaded, and rightly so, that many problems besides alcohol will not yield to a headlong assault powered by the individual alone. But now it appears that there are certain things which only the individual can do, all by himself, and in the light of his own circumstances, he needs to develop the quality of willingness. I'll give this problem everything I can possibly give it. I'm not just going to sit here and say, it'll work out. No, I'm going to do the things that are reasonable to help this problem get solved. And I want to give it everything I have in a non-power-driven way, just to try to see how I can ease the problem or make it a little better. When he acquires willingness, he is the only one who can make the decision to exert himself. I'm the only one that can put it into action. Trying to do this is an act of his own will. In other words, to make it down practical, you know, all us gals, and you men won't skate, I'll get to y'all later, but all us gals have one closet in our house and one drawer in the kitchen. It's the biggest mess. I mean, we can find anything in there. And anything can be found that maybe has been lost 3 or 4 years. It's in that kitchen drawer where we stick stuff. And we have that one closet in the house. When company's coming, guess what? Everything that's out of place goes in that closet. And a lot of you are too young to remember the story of Fibber McGee when they were Fibber McGee and Molly. And when anybody was coming, they'd start stuffing cloth in that closet, and you couldn't get the door open. They'd fuss at each other about, you know, you'd open the door and all this stuff would pile out. I have a closet almost like that. I pass it every week and I say, doggone it, tomorrow I'm going to get to that closet. Because it's bothering me, even though I can close the door and nothing is seen. But it bothers me. And I'll promise myself, and that kitchen drawer, I'm going to get in there and take those 14 half-used, anything that's half-used, anything, scotch tape, everything. There's maybe this much left in there, but I'll put that back in the drawer. And I can stew about that every time I pass by that closet. I can think, now, doggone it, I need to get in there, because, see, I don't even know what's in there anymore. Not towards the back. I have not the faintest idea. My favorite pair of shoes might be back there. And I think about that when I'm looking for something. I'll think, you know, it could be in that closet. Okay, I'm going to get it next week. Ain't done yet. And I still haven't found what I was looking for. But the thing of it is, I can't sit back and say, all right, higher power, how about cleaning that closet? Now, that's putting it down real base, but I can't do that. I've got to exert my own will to get in there and get rid of the annoyance that it's causing me. Get rid of it. Just jump in there, throw everything out of the dumb place, because I have to do this every 3 or 4 or 5 years. But it's a simple way of trying to think of using your own will, because one of the character defects is called sloth, which is a real fancy word for lazy. And see, that's what's keeping me from cleaning that closet. Just pure old laziness. I can dress it up with being busy. I'm a busy person. I mean, I'm busy from night until day. I got lots of responsibilities here. I don't have time to get in there. I'm covering up pure old laziness. I got time. I got time when I'm, you know, in taking a nap that I really don't need, or reading a book, or watching a dumb TV show. I could be in there cleaning. It's just laziness. Watching that TV show doesn't take any exertion. I don't have to bend over, stoop, pull, reach, anything. But that's our own will that we can use. He's saying, you know, most of our troubles were caused by misusing our will. But you put it in the right direction, and we can get things done. It said, it's when we try to make our will conform with God's that we begin to use it rightly. If I ever do get in there, I'm trying to work on my laziness. Just pure, that all human beings have. We all got a little streak of laziness. To all of us, this was a most wonderful revelation. Our whole trouble had been the misuse of willpower. We had tried to bombard our problems with it instead of attempting to bring it into agreement with God's intention for us. To make this increasingly possible is the purpose of AA's 12 steps, and step 3 opens the door. Once we have come into agreement with these ideas, it is really easy to begin the practice of step 3. In all times of emotional disturbance or indecision, we can pause and ask for quiet, and in the stillness simply say, God, grant me the serenity to accept those things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know that difference. Thy will, not mine, be done. And in the grapevine, one time was a sort of not a takeoff on the serenity prayer. It's not that, but it's bringing it down into just plain old ordinary country sense, so that we don't tend to fancy up everything, that it can be something we can use. That prayer is beautiful. And it says, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change. And simply that means to be aware that the irritations and disappointments of each day are not a perverse plot aimed at me by the world. To understand that this world is not operated for my benefit, that my importance and its debt to me exist in direct ratio to my contributions and my adjustments to it. Courage to change the things that I can to eliminate from my environment and its associated things I know to be harmful, attitudes that I know to be insupportable, and no matter how well I thought I argued them, reasons which have no logic. And the wisdom to know the difference, to understand with neither prejudice, self-justification, pity, why changes are necessary, and which changes will give my life meaning without alcohol. And that's what it says in practical terms. You know, just, there are things that are going to happen, things that I can't change. When we got to diagnose it on my beautiful man, that, you know, his life was destined to end. There was no way I could stop that. No way doctors could stop it in his particular case. Therefore, it was something I could not change, and thank God for this program. I was angry. I reacted like any ordinary human being with all the soberness behind me and everything in the program. But I reacted like a human being. I was angry. And then there was self-pity, and pity for him that was mislocated. In other words, I couldn't help him with pity. I could help him with strength. And y'all had given me that in this program. And I had seen y'all walk through many, many difficult situations. And that's what I needed, not to rail, you know, why has God let this happen to this beautiful man that I was married to for so many years? And of course I reacted as a human being, but thank God the program was bedlocked. The defensive driving course had been taken year after year after year before this happened. And that's, the serenity prayer was very real to me then. Change the things I can to take as good a care of myself so I could care for this man. And the wisdom to know the difference. There wasn't any way I could stop it. But there were things that I could do, but I had to watch that too and not try to drive myself in the ground so that I would last longer. So I couldn't overdo on that thing as far as courage to change the things that I can and to know the difference between these two. That there were some things about it that even no matter how hard I try, I wasn't going to change. This program is very practical, hon. Very practical. You're going to use it in your marriage, raising your kids, fighting your in-laws in every way that you can possibly imagine. Time. I'm done. Turn the oven off. I'm done. No. Okay, see y'all in the morning with step 4.